Welcome everyone to the June Health Commission meeting. This is the June 9th meeting. Lynn Enns, your chair, is not here tonight. My name is Jan Hicks and I am filling in for her. And I'd like to welcome everyone to our meeting tonight. This is the last meeting we have for this fiscal year. We will have some new commissioners in July, which you probably won't meet until August. And would like to take this opportunity to thank all of the board that has all served with us for the last several years. It's been a pleasure to work with all of you, and I know we're all going to miss each other. So thank you. First order of business is approving the minutes, and those are the minutes of May 12, 2008.
Move to approve.
Do we have a second for that motion?
Second
for that motion. The next item is public comment. Anyone wishing to excuse me. You know what? I did that last time. You think I'd do better. I apologize. May I please have a vote on the minutes, all in approval or all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Minutes are approved as they stand, and thank you. Next item, I hope I'm not forgetting anything, is public comment, and this is for anyone in our audience wishing to discuss anything not on the menu. I mean, not on the... Okay, on the agenda. We're doing good. It is dinner time, okay? Oh, gosh. Maybe I'll stop while I'm ahead. Jesse, you don't want to say anything tonight? Okay, not after that. Next item is, I'm going to say this correctly, this is Courtney Howard. She's from the Water Resources Department, and she's an engineer for the Slough County of Public Works Department. She's here to discuss the county's public works role in water resources management, among many other things. Welcome, Courtney, and thank you.
Thank you. I am a water resources engineer in the Public Works Department. My name is Courtney Howard. My focus is mainly on water resources planning. But I also work with a lot of agencies throughout the county. So I thought tonight I could give you an overview, and then if there's specific topics that you would like more detail on, then I could direct you to those experts in those areas that might come at a later time to talk in more detail. So just to give you an overview of what I'm going to touch on tonight, I'll start out with a description of the regulations of potable water supply, the sources of supply in San Luis Obispo County, and the general condition of those sources, water purveyors in the county, operation and treatment systems by those different purveyors, and then Public Works' role in the water resources management in the county. So water supply is heavily regulated, both potable water supply as well as what gets discharged to our waterways. The main act is the Safe Drinking Water Act, and it has a litany of regulations that outline source assessment, certification for both operators of treatment systems and distribution systems, and also the water quality labs that do the monitoring and sampling and testing of all the water at the different stages of treatment. The sampling protocol, the monitoring protocol, reporting requirements. So it's very heavily regulated and watched. Locally, it's by a branch of the California Department of Public Health, and nationally, it's the United States Environmental Protection Agency. And then on the other side, in terms of discharge, the Clean Water Act guides those regulations in terms of waste discharge requirements, flow quantity and quality out of wastewater treatment systems, as well as National Pollutant Discharge and Elimination System permits. If you have a facility where stormwater falls onto your facility and then flows into a water body, there's regulations guiding that for monitoring that outflow as well. And the local agency that monitors that activity is the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and statewide is the State Water Board. In our county, there's several sources of supply. We have reservoirs, groundwater, state water, even a desalination plant, and recycled water systems. Just some general observations about those different sources of supply. Reservoirs tend to have a good quality, but they can be susceptible to multi-year droughts. They're vulnerable to watershed contaminant sources as the water flows across the land and into the reservoir, and also invasive species. Hopefully you've all heard about the quagga mussels and their potential impact to our local reservoirs. Our other source, and is the main source for our county, is groundwater. We have several impacted basins, unfortunately, in our county, and they can be susceptible to multi-year droughts. State water is another source we have. Several agencies in the county take state water. The raw water is used mostly in the valley, Central Valley area, for agriculture, but for our uses, it's treated at the Colonial Pass Water Treatment Plant, which is near the 4641 intersection, and then it continues down into our county and down to Santa Barbara County. It's susceptible to earthquake and drought because there's a very fragile network of levees, and it goes through the Delta system. And right now, it's actually being restricted by court orders because of the Longfin Delta smelt. So we have a reduction in our deliveries. However, since we only take a small portion of our total allocation of state water supply, the entities that do take state water locally are still able to get 100% of what they need. And also, being connected to that state water systems provides opportunities for transfers and in order to increase that reliability. So having that opportunity in a network with other entities throughout the state can help with reliability of that system. Desalinization is very reliable, but can be very energy intensive and challenging to implement, especially due to Coastal Commission requirements and environmental constraints. A lot of research and energy is going into addressing those impacts in order to make it more palatable and economical. Recycled water is another reliable source. It's always going to be there once it's implemented, but it can be costly and it has limited applications. I just wanted to kind of touch on a map view of our different supplies and touch on the different conditions. I was hoping to point to things, but I'm assuming you're all familiar with our county and the layout, so I'll start up in the upper right hand with the very large Paso Robles groundwater basin. It's in pretty good shape, although east of Paso Robles there's some sustained levels, groundwater level declines. And so that's an issue of concern with the Board of Supervisors as well as those overlying users, including the City of Paso Robles and agricultural interests out there. So we're starting to look into managing that basin and keeping a better eye on it in terms of monitoring. Coming down through to San Luis Obispo, the City of San Luis Obispo, they have a lot of reservoirs that they take water from, and our reservoirs are in pretty good condition quantity-wise so far, but multiple years of this less than average rainfall will start to have an impact on those reservoirs and their ability to refill every year. Along the coast, starting down in the Pomo area, that's another basin where that's been impacted in terms of adjudication. It's gone through a lengthy legal process where three management groups have been set up, two that are fully in our county, the Napomo Mesa management area and the Northern Cities management area. So they've been charged with monitoring and managing their basin to ensure that it doesn't go into significant overdraft. Although initial reports for the Napomo Mesa management area indicate that that potential could be imminent. And so the county, as well as Napomo CSD, are starting to implement measures for conservation in those areas. And a lot of you are probably familiar with the situation in Los Osos. It has both quantity, mainly quality problems right now with nitrate and seawater intrusion. And so several entities in that area are cooperating to develop their management plan for that area, which will include a combination of conservation and the results of the wastewater treatment design. Cambria is restricting their development. They're looking into desalinization to help augment their portfolio of water supplies, which is only groundwater right now, and they are susceptible to the drought and don't have enough water to sustain their build out. So that's what they're looking into. So it's kind of an overview of the different areas and sources of supply in the county. In a lot of areas in the state, there's very large water districts that are responsible for conveying water to different communities. In our county, however, we just have a bunch of small systems that individual cities and private water companies Small community services areas are responsible for operating and maintaining. There's also mutual and small community water systems where there'll be a small development and they'll all share a well in a system. There's a lot of individual pumpers throughout the county with their own wells. And then I just wanted to mention the Central Coast Water Authority is the agency that operates and maintains the Central Coast branch of the State Water Project. And then the owner of the whole State Water Project is California Department of Water Resources. And then here's a map overview of those systems. You can see the state water line coming in from the east down through the county. I think it's the blue line. We've also got the pending Nos Manos Water Project, and you can see the pipeline alignment there. It'll serve the city of Paso Robles, Templeton, Atascadero, and the city of San Luis Obispo. We also have another large water source in the Lopez Water Project. Lopez water gets treated at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant and then conveyed to several users along the Five Cities area. And a lot of those Five Cities use state water as well. The other entities, there's a branch right at the grade that goes off towards Morro Bay, so CMC and our County Operations Center and Cuesta College and Morro Bay all use state water along that pipeline. I kind of wanted to compare and contrast water portfolios. If you look at the city of San Luis Obispo, they have the Santa Margarita Lake, they have Nos Manos, they have Whale Rock Reservoir, they also have their groundwater systems, and they also have a recycled water system. So they have a very diverse portfolio to get them through droughts and their ultimate build out. And a lot of our smaller communities are solely dependent on groundwater. And in those areas where the groundwater is starting to be impacted, those agencies are starting to look at alternatives such as recycling, desalinization, and imported water such as state water. And this brings me to the role of public works in water resources management. We have an operations side and a planning side. We do have several small water and wastewater systems that we operate and maintain. Once the Nos Manos project is implemented, we'll be operating and maintaining that system. We currently operate the Lopez Water Treatment Plant and Conveyance System. We also have some small systems in Santa Margarita and Shandon wastewater system in the country at the Country Club. We also operate the water treatment plant in Cayucas that serves the three water purveyors there, two private and the county service area, 10A there. We have our own water quality lab that, in addition to our operators that operate all the systems, they are a certified water quality lab, and they are in charge of monitoring the reservoir's quality as well as the systems and reservoirs that I mentioned. And then in those individual systems, our office staff looks at those systems and does system master planning, making sure that the infrastructure will meet the needs of the communities, and they do any capital improvements that are needed, tanks and pipes and treatment upgrades. The other side is the planning side, which is the one I'm more involved in. The last time we did a master water plan for the county where we just painted the whole picture of supply and demand countywide was in 1998, so we're going to go ahead and update that and in cooperation with water agencies throughout the county. And another plan that we're working on is the Integrated Water Management Plan. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Proposition 50 that established that program, but basically the state saw that there were water purveyors and entities that were managing the same hydraulic region or watershed. So, you know, in this program, they said, okay, form regions where you're sharing the same source and work together to come up with projects that integrate benefits to sustain that resource. And so throughout the state, agencies have formed regions, including ourselves. And what made sense for our region boundaries was the county line because of all the water purveyors that are within that county line. And so we've worked with all the entities in the county. And the IRWM plan is not just supply, it's also quality, flood control, groundwater management, and environmental ecosystem restoration. So it brings in a lot of the water quality side and the environmental groups to have a complete integrated plan. And we'll be updating that through Proposition 84 because our state's coming out with new guidelines. So a lot of that planning effort is done through our Water Resources Advisory Committee. It's our main forum that meets once a month, and it's made up of all the water agencies in the county. Some of the cities assign a council member and a staff member to attend, and they make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors on any plans or water resources related actions that are taking place in the county. So that's our main forum for working cooperatively on countywide water resources. We also have a data collection network where we collect rainfall information and stream gauging and groundwater levels. So that's been really helpful for subregions and local entities to have information and understand the conditions of their water supplies. We also have a flood control component, which is really helpful for us all being together to facilitate developing that integrated regional water management plan. And a lot of interagency coordination, just trying to be a resource and bring together entities that have similar water resource needs. That's kind of an overview of our role in public works. So with that, I'll just leave it to questions. And then if you had any interest in a specific area where it might be more appropriate for one of those system water purveyors or our water quality lab, they're real familiar with all the regulations of water quality and potable water supply. And then a lot of our other agencies and our planning departments are really involved with their conservation element and land use, how it relates to water as well. So they're a good resource as well.
I think we've got a question right here with Commissioner Horn.
I'm curious about that. You're talking about the water that all of us drink and use for our personal use. What about agricultural water? What is the percentage of water that's used by agriculture versus the percentage that's used by people? Not crops.
I'm trying to think of numbers for the Paso Basin, the groundwater basin in Paso Robles. I believe it's 60% agricultural and 40% urban.
And does that follow throughout the rest of the county?
I'd probably say it's pretty close in the other basins.
Is there any type of an agreement between the county and agricultural entities that in the time of a drought, people get first call on water and crops get second call on water?
There's no agreement like that at this time. They do have an agricultural element of the general plan that outlines certain policies. And I imagine that issue might come up in the conservation element, the development of that document.
Thank you.
I'd like to open this up to any other commissioners that have any questions. We've got, should I start, anybody down here? Commissioner Guerrero?
Just to follow up on Commissioner Horn's question. When, let's say, for example, a winery wants to open up in North County, is there any regulations or any limitations on the amount of water they can pump out of the ground?
No.
None. Okay. Now, in following that, you said up in the Paso Crescent area, there's a groundwater decline. I understand it's quite a big decline. It's has dropped quite a way. Has there been any speculation on why it has declined so much in the recent past?
We're actually updating the pumping estimates of the different types of land uses and the different an estimate of the water that they use. And we're developing a resource capacity study where we'll explore that issue. I think just the changes in land use and growth in that area have all contributed to sustained decline in that area, and that groundwater being the only source of supply for all of those users, I think over time has led to that impact.
Now, there was talk recently about using groundwater to put in, state water to put into the ground. In that area, is that still an option?
It is an option out there. Yeah, we did recently complete a study to see if it was physically possible to percolate water into the groundwater basin in order to offset that level decline. not only just recharging the basin, but also looking at banking as an option, because banking would provide additional partners to help fund that kind of a project. They use that in the valley a lot, Kern County Water Bank Semi-Trophic Water Storage District, to help offset their storage declines and also provide reliability to state water users. And so in the resource capacity study for that basin, as well as the groundwater management plan, we'd be looking at that option as a measure to address the declines.
So it's still a possibility that that could happen?
It is.
Okay. Are there any desal plants in the county now?
City of Morro Bay has a desalinization plant.
I thought you had one in Pismo Beach as well that just came online.
They're looking into doing a desalinization plant, the Five Cities area, but they haven't put one online yet.
And does your group monitor the waste discharge plants, the plants that clean up the waste?
That would be the Regional Water Quality Control Board.
One of the topics that we've discussed quite a bit here are pharmaceuticals in the water. Is there any way to take those out of our current system?
I'd say that California EPA is the lead agency on doing that research, and it's kind of an emerging contaminant, and that sometime down the line, once they've completed that research,
okay.
Regulations.
So we haven't done anything about it ourselves.
No,
okay.
Not locally.
Now, these maps that you showed, are any of them online?
Yes, they are from our IRWM plan.
Okay.
At slowcountywater.org.
Okay, good. And my final question: You look at a lot of different water things. Do you look at pan evaporation in the county?
We do collect pan evaporation.
And have you been able to look at that over a decade or a couple of decades? Have you seen any decline?
We haven't analyzed that,
okay.
But we do have collected the data.
Okay.
I wouldn't know. Sorry.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Commissioner O'Dell?
No, I just want to clarify one thing, that wineries do not use water in their wine.
You don't water it down?
No. But they use water to wash their barrels and their tanks. And I just wanted to, the audience wouldn't get the wrong impression.
Vineyards.
Vineyards.
Tremendous.
Oh, yeah, vineyards. I said winery.
Oh, okay.
The difference.
Got it.
With California water law, as long as you're an overlying landowner that puts water to beneficial use, then you're allowed to use as much water as is beneficial, which is subjective.
There is some dry farming going on in San Luis Obispo County.
Yes, there is. And I would like to see, in Europe, they dry farm almost all of the vineyards. And I don't know why they can't do it here, which would then take a lot of the problem off of drought years.
Use it for vineyards.
That explains why California wines are much better than European wines.
I don't know if that's all.
Commissioner Chamusis.
Thank you. It's my understanding that the Public Works is, what I think I heard, in charge of sort of riding herd over the various and sundry smaller, like the individual well on individual pieces of property, as well as a small community service, community water districts. And is that correct or is that not correct?
I wouldn't say we're in charge. Definitely they're their own jurisdiction, but we cooperate with them and work together to manage basins where there's overlapping jurisdictions and multiple users across that basin or watershed. So it's more of a cooperative effort to them that we try to plan together and share each other's information.
So given that we are officially in a drought and there are going to be restrictions applied, how is that going to be done to all of these various
individual little water purveyors will be responsible for implementing any conservation measures for their systems.
And who monitors that?
It would be the state Department of Health Services, probably.
Okay.
Because all those water purveyors have a permit to appropriate that water to their customers, and so they're under that permit is where that regulation would fall.
But for individual well owners and operators?
Yeah, the county doesn't have a groundwater management ordinance or any authority, existing authority over individual pumpers, other than those in adjudicated basins, which is under court orders.
So then if, and this will be my last question,
if
somebody applies for a permit to drill a well on an individual parcel, say someone wants to build a new home or ranch or what have you, and they need their own well because there's no other water source around there, how is that adjudicated? I mean, who determines whether or not it's okay and how much it's okay to pull out of the ground?
Yeah, individual pumpers aren't regulated at that individual level. Public health department issues the well permits. I might have to defer to them on specifics for individual pumpers, but there's no regulation of individuals. It's more so developments and multiple lot developments that fall under county planning jurisdiction.
But then the individual wells still do have to pass the potable standards, correct, before they're allowed to?
I believe I'm going to defer to public
okay.
agency.
All right. Thank you. Interesting presentation. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Commissioner Hetherington.
Thank you. How is the governor's mandate about drought conditions going to impact your department?
So far, not much, just because he's declared drought and he hasn't gone as far as an emergency where there's a mandatory implementation of things. Basically, Public Works in general, not anything really, except for possibly the state will be more cooperative if any state water transfers that we engage in. Currently, Santa Barbara County is looking at purchasing some of our water on an emergency basis for this year and next year, the water that our purveyors don't need to use. So DWR has expedited that process, and that's one of the four components of the governor's issuance of the drought statement is expediting transfers to those who really need it, as well as encouraging local agencies to implement conservation measures. And it's just more of an awareness at this point of impending impacts of a drought.
I thought that there was some allusion to also development, that development projects are going to be scrutinized for their usage more than they have been in the past.
I think individual jurisdictions are looking more at that and implementing requirements for developers to come in with water and reliable water supplies. I know in a lot of our impacted areas where the Board of Supervisors has adopted a level of severity 3 in groundwater basins, they're looking at development to offset any water use that their development's going to have. So there, I think there has been a lot of talk throughout the state in moving in that direction.
My next question is the Lopez area. That lake where they draw the water from is like the low point for all the ag operations there. And you're saying that there's no way to get the pharmaceuticals out of the water. What about the pesticides and fertilizers that may cause endocrine disruption or neurotoxicity? How do you deal with those?
I know they do a watershed sanitary survey around the lake. I'd probably have to defer to our water quality lab, who's responsible for doing those reports, and they could probably provide more detail as to what those sanitary surveys have revealed at the different reservoirs and the different measures that have been recommended, probably pasture grazing management and setbacks. I'd have to look.
I know that they've gotten better in this near future or this time, but before there wasn't a lot of management of where those runoffs were supposedly to end. The data collection that you referred to, could you you explain a little bit about gathering that information and how that can be used to maybe steer development to different areas or, you know, cut down on the types of developments in water shortage areas? Or you haven't used that data in that regard yet?
I'd say mostly the data is used to analyze the supply, the sources, the water quality, not the water quality, the water supply sources. And then from there, in those assessments, then it, you know, kicks up to the Board of Supervisors and looking at the overall development and deciding whether or not, you know, through the environmental review process, environmental impact reports and such, they do a detailed analysis of the water supply and impacts to the water supply where that development is occurring. And it also establishes mitigation measures for addressing those impacts. And then when it gets to the Board of Supervisors, it's ultimately their decision on whether they move forward on those different projects. But the data can help to provide a baseline for analyzing that water source.
Do you also measure stream flows in areas that are going to be potentially developed, and how do you handle that process?
We kind of have a broad range of coverage throughout the county. I don't think the placement of those stream gauges have been related to development necessarily, but they are on pretty important streams such as the Rio Grande Creek and Salinas River, the San Simeon Creek, a lot of coastal creeks, especially because of operating our reservoirs in conjunction with steelhead trout habitat and making sure there's enough flow for them to flow upstream. So I'd say it was more for environmental reasons, and it hasn't moved in toward the decline as a result of development per se.
Thank you.
Was there any more questions before I open this to the audience? Dr. Marce? I'd like to open this to our audience for discussion. You've been great at answering all of our questions. Thank you. We're putting you on the spot. Jesse, would you like to come up? I do need you to post or state your name for the record, yep. Just for the record.
Yep. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. Thanks for coming out to talk to us tonight. I wanted to clear up something that Ed asked about. I think it was his last question. Did you say pan evaporation? And what was that? What was that about?
Basically, at the reservoirs, it's a mechanism for determining how much water is lost just to the atmospheric conditions. And it can be used it's used at the reservoirs to estimate the loss from evaporation from the top of the reservoir. But it can also be used to estimate the evapotranspiration in terms of crops and irrigation, and that information can be used to optimize your irrigating patterns.
It has been discovered lately that evaporation has been decreasing with the increase of pollutants in the air, because the evaporation actually occurs from the rays of the sun. It's not the ambient temperature so much as the rays of the sun hitting the water and causing the evaporation. And because of the pollution in the air, the pan evaporation measurement is decreased, and it's thought that that may lead to a decrease in rainfall.
Okay, when you say pan, I think of a pan that you're going to bake something.
Pan. It is a pan.
What is it? Is there a pan in this?
Basically, it's a pan filled with water. You mark it with a Sharpie. You come back in 2 days and you see how far it's dropped.
Okay, so there is a pan.
Yeah, there's a pan.
Thank you for clarifying that. Two things I wanted to find out more about. One is fluoridation. I understand if you're a town as big as San Luis Obispo, you have to fluoridate. If you're a town as small as Cambria, where I live, you don't. Can you tell us what the cutoff point is? And then the city that's fluoridating, does anyone else oversee them to see that they're doing it properly?
The answer to the second part is the Department of Health Services. They're the ones that ensure that everything is done properly and is monitored and adequate levels of chemicals are applied and such. The specific question about fluoridation and rules and regulations, I'm afraid I don't know the answer to, but I know our water quality lab experts would. And I can get back to you on that.
The other question is chlorination. Traditionally, in modern times, we've disinfected our water with chlorine. Now there's a new one I've heard of, chloramine. So could you tell us the pros and cons of those two methods and what's going on with that?
I'm not quite the expert in water quality, but I'll take a shot. There has been concern about disinfection byproducts, trihalomethanes that can be produced with using some types of chlorine disinfectants. And so that switch, I think that's where that switch has been generated to address that issue. Other than that, I think that's the main issue with switching to that newer disinfectant.
So basically, what are the hazards of the trihalomethane?
They've been shown to cause cancer.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Courtney? Courtney, you've been a wonderful, informative speaker, and I want to thank you for everything.
Sure. Let me know if there's anyone I can direct you to if you want a future presentation, and please visit our website. Thanks.
Our next item on the agenda is proposed reduction to the contract amount. This is for Community Health Centers of the Central Coast, and Larry Bacuse, the contract manager, will be coming up to do this presentation. Okay, I do have on my glasses, and I do believe I'm reading them correctly. So, Jeff?
Let me talk about it. He'll have something to say.
Please. Maybe we can hear from him. Maybe we can hear from both of you.
Jeff Hamm, Health Agency Director. Good evening. I actually wanted to comment. The budget hearings are a week from tonight. They start on Monday the 16th, and it'll probably take a good 3 days for the board to get through all the decisions they're going to have to make. as far as the health agency's situation relative to the county budget, it's the biggest problem for us right now is the state budget. As you know, when we put our budget together in the winter, we make assumptions about the various multiple state funding sources that are going to contribute to almost all of our programs, and we hope those assumptions are accurate. Sometimes we take what the governor includes in his January budget into consideration, sometimes we don't, and that has to do with a couple different variables. One is we actually work with the administrative office. Our budgets are due February 9th. We don't have a lot of time. We work on them for a couple of months, and then we don't have a lot of time to make last-minute adjustments based on the governor's proposal that comes out in January. And sometimes we don't really want to assume that the governor's proposal is going to make it. Sure. and a classic example occurred last year at this time. Well, actually, in the last year's budget development process, governor proposed to eliminate $55 million statewide of funding for what we call HOP program, a homeless outreach program for mentally ill. A program that everybody believed was a very, very effective, cost-effective way to deal with mentally ill and homelessness issues. We were so sure that the governor would be overturned by the legislature that we basically just assumed, and that the legislature would restore funding for the program, which ultimately they did. We didn't know about that until July or early August, and we were very happy and then very disappointed when the governor blue-penciled the $54.9 million out of the state budget as he signed it. And made it reality. So there's a lot of uncertainty in each of the individual proposals that are made through the state budget development process. When the May revise comes out, I get a call that afternoon from the Tribune reporter covering Health and Human Services, and he wants to know, you know, he or she wants to know right away, what does this mean? Unfortunately, we really don't know what's going to happen. We do know that if all of the governor's proposals are signed into law, we will have $2 million less departmental revenue than we have assumed and has been incorporated into the CAO's proposed budget for this year, for 08-09. The good news is, so far, the Senate subcommittee and assembly subcommittees that have been working on the holding budget hearings and working on evaluating the legitimacy or the advantages and disadvantages of those proposals have disagreed with the governor to the tune of about $1.4 billion and have indicated in their budgets that they would restore funding for those various programs that, again, amount to about $2 million for us. Well, that's great, except the legislature has just dug a hole $1.4 billion deeper, and they already have a tremendous deficit in Sacramento. And so we're going to be in a situation where we have to wait until the state budget is adopted before we really know whether we have a very significant problem on our hands for the 08-09 fiscal year or a less significant problem on our hands. And until we know that, we can really only speculate on what the county's reaction in these chambers would be about what to do. As you know, the recommended budget included a $1 million increase in general fund support to the health agency, which was $1.5 million less than we would have needed to maintain a status quo budget. And we had a long list of prioritized prospective cuts. CAO, in coming up with what to recommend to the Board of Supervisors, went down that list for our department, went down that list for all the departments, certain distance down the list, drew a line, added it all up. You've seen that list of 18 proposals or service level reductions that are included in the CAO's budget, and you chose to take action on two of them, the medical ombudsman program and the grant amount to community health centers of the Central Coast. And last month when you acted, I didn't say anything about that one way or the other. I didn't recommend that you take a particular position on either of those things, and I didn't attempt to convince you one way or the other. But I feel like I have an obligation to let you know that if called on Monday to address either of those two items, my recommendation to the board, and this is the recommendation that I've been sharing with individual board members, is that the board not restore funding for those two individual programs. And I wanted to explain to you why I feel I have, why I've been telling them that, and I'll tell them that next Monday if they ask. So real quickly on those two, if I might. On the ombudsman program, as you guys know, that $50,000 contract that we have with EOC was not enough for a full-time position. It didn't fund a full-time position. In fact, in its first couple years, it intended to fund a half-time position. And EOC had a very difficult time retaining a person who could perform those duties in a half-time job. And we ended up getting SenCal Health, even before they were SenCal Health, to contribute financially to the EOC to help Biz and Lilly and EOC management put together a full-time position. And with that increased funding, we were lucky enough, they were lucky enough to retain Mary, and Mary's been doing a great job in the program. The SenCal Health component of funding for that position is going to be discontinued. I mean, I can't speak for SenCal Health, even though I am one of the five County Board of Supervisors appointees. I'm on the board of directors, but it was really intended to help with the transition and help get information out to Medi-Cal beneficiaries prior to the establishment of the Medi-Cal Managed Care Plan in March, which, as we know, is several months behind us now. I mean, we're well into the transition. And they have a well-developed member services department that, in our view, would be the place that we would be referring folks who are Medi-Cal beneficiaries and are having complaints or concerns or questions, the kinds of things that Mary would be dealing with if her position were sustained. We would be redirecting those inquiries to SenCal Health's member services department. It was almost two-thirds of the total volume of individuals that Mary had helped in the last year, for example. So from a half-time position reduced by two-thirds, we ended up with a much smaller need, in our opinion. And I think a couple of you mentioned last time in your deliberations on that particular issue, you know, maybe a part-time position would be better than nothing. And I mean, that's consistent with our perception about the relative need of that function as well. But for CMSP and unsponsored individuals who are our legal obligation under our contract with CHC, I'm telling you that what we intend to do is respond to those inquiries directly at the staff level, directly and competently. It behooves us to meet those individuals' needs, keeps them from calling you, keeps them from calling members of the Board of Supervisors, members of the state legislature, or Congresswoman Capps, where we occasionally will have a person who continues to be unhappy with what we tell them no matter who it is that's talking with them about their issues. And so there are occasionally some who make it to CAPS's staff or Assembly Member Blakeslee's staff and or me, my phone, and we will continue to have some of those. But there was a reason that we had that fairly high up our list. And even for $50,000, if the Board of Supervisors were to ask me on Monday if I could use $50,000 for something, I would say yes, but it would not be for that. So I just want you to know that, and then you can certainly ask me any questions that you want. Gene, you want to put that up? On CHC's contract, as you know, we had engaged in discussions with CHC management, CEO, and Dr. Bacous, who's our liaison under the contract, and asked them last winter, what would the consequences be of reduced levels of county grant funding? And they basically told us about $250,000 of county grant funding supports a provider, the three support staff that go with that provider. A typical provider has a panel of patients, about 1,500. An average patient goes to the doc about three times a year, 4,500 patient encounters or clinic visits per $250,000 of county grant fund. So if you take it down $250,000, it's one provider, 4,500 visits. If you take the grant amount down $500,000, two providers, 9,000 visits. And that's information that we've shared with you. At last month's meeting, I think, Commissioner Warren asked, so is it an actual reduction, or are those patients going to be able to be absorbed elsewhere into the system? And I said, no, it's an actual reduction. You can't cut $500,000 of revenue out of their organization and just assume the same way you can't do in any of our programs. You can't assume that everybody else has unused capacity, people aren't working hard. You're just going to ask everybody else to, you know, buck up and produce more work. You can't do that. I mean, you hope that you can find efficiencies here and there, and you want to make sure that you implement whichever ones you can. What wasn't made clear to me until very, very recently, and what I want to make clear to you today, is that the difference between an absolute cut and a reduction in the rate of growth, because I think that's what renders this particular issue different from any of the other 60-plus issues on the long version of the health agency's cut list. And the data that we're projecting on the screen here, and that I think you guys can all see on your little screens, those are clinic visits in SLO County clinics for the 2 years before our contract and the 3 years of actual data, 04, 05, 05, 06, and 06, 07, and we've gotten all this data from CHC. The 07, 08 bar graph that shows 195,000 visits is their projected actual volume, utilization volume for the current fiscal year. And you can see that's, 18,000, 16,000 more visits than the previous year. So the rate of growth that CHC has experienced since the first year of our contract has really been very substantial. It's been a great arrangement for the low-income Medi-Cal, CMSP, and unsponsored folks in our county. The far right are three alternative levels of utilization, and the one that I want to bring your attention to first is the one in the middle. It looks kind of orange, I guess, pink, whatever color it is. That's the CHC's preliminary budget. Those are their numbers. It's actually their total expenses for next year are going to increase about $3 million over this year, as will their total revenues. The number that they included in that set of data for the county's grant, and I'm not sure why they got this number, maybe Larry knows by now why, but it's what Bob Lotwala, their chief financial officer, included in their budget for the county grant, is 5,059,555. It's 5,006, so $5,060,000. That number is actually only $170,000 more than that is included in the CAO's recommended budget. Okay, so I'm not sure why they use that number. And we guessed when we put our budget together, about the two indices that drive the pharmacy clinic and the medical care clinic, the pharmacy contract and the clinic contract, what that would require for 08-09 as our status quo. Okay, so this year's amount is $5.22 million. We assumed next year's amount would be just under $5.4 million. And then we said on our cut list, if you reduce that by $500,000, it would come down to $4.89 million, which is $500,000 less than next year's amount, which is about $200,000 more than this year's amount. So it is a $500,000 cut from what the contract would require that the county pay them next year. But it's only about a $300,000 cut from this year's amount. And for whatever reason, they assumed a different number. And I think they assumed a different inflator, and then they reduced it by $500,000. I'm not sure. But that's their budget based on a county contribution of 5.06, basically. Okay. Now, the county's budget doesn't include that. It includes $170,000 less. $170,000 is about two-thirds of $250,000. 250 equals 4,500 visits. 170 then equates to about 3,000 visits. So I took and reduced their utilization estimate by 3,000 visits because I believe that that is an accurate reflection of the utilization capacity, you know, the production capacity or whatever term you want to use, the number of visits they'll be able to provide at the recommended level of funding. So it's 204,000 visits, which is 9,000 visits more than they will do this year. And then I went and I did the other. I added the money back so that we would have a number that I think accurately equates to if there had been no cut in funding at all. If there had been the fifth year of the contractually obligated grant amount, about just under 5.4 million, that's the 213,000 visits. And the 9,000 visit reduction is the difference between the 213 and the 204. So even with a $500,000 cut in county grant funds, they will continue to grow. And I think that's a fairly significant point. In fact, again, Dr. Bacus is here, he can speak to this, but 9,000 more visits next year than this year should require that they add two more providers for the same reason that 9,000 fewer visits because of a reduction in funding would require that they lay off two providers and the associated support staff that go with them. Again, of all of the cuts that we, of all the service level reductions that we put on our list and presented to the CAO for their consideration, this is the only one that I'm aware of all of them, where even with the reduced funding, because it's not all other things equal in CHC's financial world. There are other variables. For example, Medi-Cal Managed Care, as administered by SenCal Health, provides for incentive payments for primary care providers who sign up with SenCal Health to take care of patients. They take a certain number of lives. It's a managed care plan. They negotiate a capitation rate for those lives. And if they provide services at the quality standards that SenCal Health establishes for those primary care providers, they can earn incentive payments. There's $1.5 million of incentive payments in CHC's budget for next year. Now, those obviously have nothing to do with the services that they provide to CMSP patients or to unsponsored patients, who are the patients, you know, for whom the county's contribution is intended to provide access to services. But as Dr. Bacus has told me, you know, our funds are not even really patient-specific funds. They don't show up in their budget under patient revenue. It's a grant. It just goes in to augment their total means of financing. And even though county funding is down, if it hadn't been, they would grow at 6%, which is closer to the rate of growth that they've been growing for the first several years of the county's contract. And even with the cut, they will still grow. They sent a letter out recently, I don't know if any of you have seen it. It was addressed to CHC patients. I think it was distributed through the clinics, primarily to patients in Morro Bay and Cambria. Got it right that time. Just not looking. And it was a request for people to show up at the Board of Supervisors meeting and to, you know, to lobby the board not to make the cut. And it suggested that at the recommended level of funding, they would have to close the clinic in Cambria. They would have to close a clinic in Morro Bay. And they would have to discontinue transportation services in San Luis Obispo County. And I was a little disappointed in the contents of that letter. I had been meeting with CHC managers relatively frequently for several months now and had repeatedly reminded them that they couldn't unilaterally close the Cambria Clinic. It's part of what the county has obligated them to, in their contract to do. They've opened other clinics. They've added providers in other areas of the county to meet the increased demand and to provide services. There are lots of things that they can do in response to reduced county funding to adjust to, you know, reduced overall means of financing. But close the Cambria Clinic is not one of them. And so I'll go on record on Monday with the Board of Supervisors, but for you and for anyone else who happens to be listening, I think there's a lot of anxiety and some confusion that's been generated in the community because of that letter. And I wouldn't characterize it as entirely accurate. There's going to be a process where we will, if the Board of Supervisors adopts the budget on Monday, as I suspect they will, there will be a process that will require that county folks sit down with CHC folks and see if we can't come to agreement on any terms in our contract that would be required to be modified in order to continue to have the relationship with them that we've had. But I don't know why an organization needing to continue to add staff, to continue to grow and to continue to provide even more services next year than they have in this year or in the year before, would need to be threatening things like closing clinics on the North Coast or making any other absolute reductions in their capacity to provide services, because they aren't going to shrink. They're just not going to grow as much. So thank you for your putting up with the minutes that it took me to walk through that. I did want to make sure that you understood that's the information I've been sharing with the board, and that's what I'd be sharing with them on Monday if the issue comes up on Monday. I had contemplated recommending that you rescind the action that you took last month, but I didn't advise you last month, and I'm not going to advise you on it this month. I did want to be clear with you about my perspective on this and what I was going to be telling the board, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you for your presentation, and it was very, very informative, and I think we probably all learned a lot from it. Let's start down here with questions, Dr. Masse. Commissioner Hetherington?
I guess I want to hear Larry.
Okay. can I go through the questions for Jeff first? Commissioner Tumiasis?
I just have a quick one, Jeff. In terms of the ombudsperson responsibility, and you indicated that your staff was going to take on those issues directly, is there going to be any tracking of that? Is there going to be any reporting of that? And who's going to be accountable and responsible for the follow-up and how?
We certainly can, will, and me, to you. We can produce information. I'd be happy to share it with you on an ongoing basis. I am going to be curious about how things really do go. I suspect, Mary's here too, I don't know whether she's seen a noticeable decline in calls based on the existence of CenCal Health's member services department, but I'm assuming that there will be a reduction in the calls that would have ordinarily gone to Mary based on that point that I've already articulated. So if CenCal Health does step up and take care of folks who are Medi-Cal beneficiaries and have questions or concerns or complaints or whatever, that should fairly significantly reduce the volume of work.
Well,
and I'm counting on it.
That's the CenCal Health folks, but I'm talking about those other folks that aren't on Medi-Cal.
Sure.
That are the ones that have traditionally sort of fallen through the cracks, and, you know, where do they go and how do they know? And, yes, I would be extremely interested in having that information.
Yeah, we'll gather that data for you.
Okay.
Commissioner Hetherington?
How are you going to get the word out there? I mean, Mary's done an excellent job, and so has EOC, of, you know, how to contact her. How are you going to market yourself?
Well, I think the point of contact is principally CHC clinics. We have a flyer, and the last meeting we had about a month ago, we were reviewing a draft of the flyer, and Marcia had been talking to Mary and others about what information should be included in the flyer. We would certainly encourage CHC to make those materials readily available to their patients. I don't know, we hadn't talked about asking them to put something up in their waiting rooms saying, if you have a problem with your care, call this number. We hadn't, I'm not familiar with the details, but. I'm sorry?
Bilingual, I hope.
Yeah. So, I mean, we want information to be available to folks when they need it. We haven't talked about taking out any ads in the paper, but the Board of Supervisors hasn't acted on the proposed budget yet either, so.
Commissioner O'Dell? No. Anybody else, John? Commissioner Donnelly? Okay, well,
thank you.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, we have someone from the audience that would like to speak. Please come up. Would you like Jeff to stay at the podium for you?
Yes, from wherever.
Okay.
I'm not up on Dawn Williams. I have heard from several people that there are doctors in the community who are no longer taking Medi-Cal patients. Is this, if this is true, and I don't know that it is widespread, is this going to increase the call on the CHC clinics?
I don't have any data that indicates that any of the non-CHC physicians who were taking Medi-Cal patients are no longer. I have not heard that. If that were the case, then yes, it would increase the demand on CHC.
I know of one doctor in particular, and I don't know how widespread it is. That's why I'm asking the question. We may not see the impact for a while.
Yeah, it would be a question worth posing to CenCal Health Management, who would know the answer.
They will know which doctors are participating.
They would know who have signed up to be providers under the Medi-Cal Managed Care Plan that exists now, and presumably would know whether they had been or had not been providers under the fee-for-service system.
Thank you. Thank you. Jesse, would you like to come to the podium, please? State your name for the record.
Thank you. Jesse Arnold, Cambria. Jeff, I'm sure you saw the article in the paper where the grand jury came out with a report that said the county had saved some $2 million or something because of the closure of the general hospital, and it was my understanding that the CHC clinics were to be what we were getting instead of the hospital, and someone in my position who's, you know, just reading the newspaper could think, well, gee, if we saved millions, where did those millions go? How come we're now having to cut on CHC when we saved all these millions of dollars? So if you could straighten me out on that, I'd appreciate it.
I'd be happy to. The grand jury estimated that the savings was about $3.5 million. The short answer is the health agency's general fund contribution over the last 7 years has gone from $2.5 million to $19 million. Last year alone, from 2006-07 to 2007-08, the general fund contribution to the health agency's programs increased $5 million. There's no way that the Board of Supervisors would have been able to avoid the kinds of reductions that they're being forced to face now earlier had it not been for the savings attributable to that decision. It's not like that's the only thing. Usually that's what happens is people ask, well, if the county saved so much money on that one particular thing, where's the money? Well, the county's budget is big, and the Board of Supervisors have an interest in maintaining service levels across the board, you know, roads, parks, libraries. There's plenty of demand, so, but I can honestly point you just to the health agency in terms of the level of financial support that we have received over the last several years. It's gone up dramatically.
Commissioner Warren?
That brings up a question. With the unfilled positions within the county, when you talk about money that's out there can you give us an estimate about within the county budget, because there's a hiring freeze right now, how many positions do we actually have in the county, or some ballpark figure, what percentage are unfilled positions?
I can't countywide. I have no idea. I can for the health agency.
Okay.
We have been between 55 and 60 for several months. The Supervisor Sajjan prefers to call it a hiring process. We actually have asked for approval and have obtained approval to fill, I don't have the numbers, it's probably 40 or 50 positions in the past 6 months since the hiring process was established. You know, there's always been a hiring process. You know how difficult it is to go through a bureaucratic organization to fill a vacant position. It just added a step. You have to get the CAO's approval before you can proceed to conduct a recruitment or to fill a position with a person off of a certified list if there's already been a recruitment. And correctional nurses at the jail, you know, I send the email. He's very, very timely in responding to my requests. I haven't had a request denied yet. We just are working together to try and ensure that if we have to reduce further, and we hope we won't have to, but if we do, we will minimize the potential for layoffs. I want to hire people now and have to lay them off in October. So we continue to work around that process, and it's kind of cumbersome.
Okay, so it's approximately 60 positions that are unfilled at this point?
At any point in time, it's about 60. But I'm guessing, and I'm sorry I don't have the numbers, but I bet you 20 of them we have approval to fill, maybe more. What we do is we end up with a list of possible service level reductions. If we see something that's very high on the list, where an administrative assistant position is included, we suspect that there's a very good chance that we're going to have to shrink by one administrative assistant at some point in the near future. We've got 40 administrative assistant positions throughout the organization. We carry one vacancy. We try and carry it in the program where it's least impactful to the folks who are trying to continue to get work done and where people still have expectations that we're going to get work done. But that second vacancy, if I only have one of a particular job classification at risk, and what matters is how far down the list you go. You know, if we have to go $2 million down the list, that's a lot of vacancies we have to maintain. If we only have to go $500,000 down the list, it's only a couple. So we're just trying to do the best we can to continue to provide the services that are funded now without adding positions that are going to put employees at risk of layoff.
Any other questions for Jeff? Larry, do you mind coming up and talking with us?
Basically, I wanted to come here tonight. I didn't realize I had the presentation, but just to say that, you know, we do appreciate the endorsement that the Health Commission had endorsed, not reducing the grant amount to CHC. And also someone else brought up about the grand jury report, so, you know, you all know that. And the letter that Jeff is talking about, but before I start, I'm not here to rebut what Jeff had. We actually talked before, and I had said to him, well, good luck in convincing the Health Commissioners to overturn their endorsement. But, you know, CHC has been around for about 30 years, and the idea of CHC actually developed about 40 years ago throughout the United States. And, you know, we're a family of a huge amount of community health centers throughout the United States. And one of the things that is mandated for us is to see all patients, specifically the indigent, the vulnerable, the homeless, and they don't just apply this to just any clinic. These clinics have to show fiscal viability. They have to show that they actually are there to provide the primary care and sometimes specialty care, which is very rare. So CHS had done that. And when we partnered up with the county, in the contract basically it states that we need to kind of grow. We need to kind of, you know, do what we do. And, you know, we did. It just seems that from what, you know, what he had mentioned, his perspective is that we're being punished for doing that by, you know, you're taking a half million. $500,000 is quite a bit in our organization, but we will work with the county to try to ease all that if we can. And we have been. We've been, you know, as you all know, we've done well with the contract. Grand jury had mentioned that. They had actually did investigative work and found that this has actually been a very fruitful for the patients and the community. And I think, and we do understand that the county is undergoing some financial strife, you know, and I was mentioning to an email to Jeff that CHC as well. As many of you may not know, here in San Luis Obispo County, we're losing quite a few docs to the prison system. You believe that? I mean, we're losing them. And it's not hard. I mean, you know, if doctors grow on trees, then we'll plant those trees to bring them in. And so a lot of times, it's very difficult for us to bring in these docs and, you know, cost of living here. And so, you know, this $500,000 is, you know, he asked us, you know, what would happen if we decrease you guys by 250? Well, you know, we kind of put a number together and, you know, 500,000, 750,000 and so forth. That's what I presented to you all last time. That's, you know, and that still holds. And if you notice in that, it's a public that we said that we would close Cambria and Morro Bay. So the fact that he was upset with his letter is kind of mind-boggling to me, because we've mentioned that to you all here in public, and we also had talked to each of the Board of Supervisors with that same thing. And but, you know, it's kind of mind-boggling to me. But anyway, CHC is, regardless, is going to continue doing what they do, because that's what we do. We provide primary health care, and we provide it to the most vulnerable in the community. And I think this reduction will actually hurt them, if anything. That's my speech.
Do you have any comments for Mr. Pacus, Commissioner Hetherington, please?
Thanks for coming. Sorry, I know it's a challenge. Is that negotiable, do you think, as far as the $500,000?
For us, it is.
Is it for the county, Jeff?
I wouldn't call it negotiable, but it's a CAO recommended funding level, and like all of the CAO's recommended funding levels, it's subject to public debate, scrutiny, and question and
negotiation.
And well, the Board of Supervisors really isn't negotiating with anyone when they make the decisions that they make during the budget hearings. They take public input, they weigh the advantages and disadvantages of the decisions they have to make, and they vote yes or no. I wouldn't call that negotiations.
Yeah, let me just add that the numbers that Jeff actually came up with is from our budget, which has not been approved yet. The board members just basically just took it on about 2 weeks ago to look it over, so that has not been approved. So he's actually using those numbers.
Jeff had mentioned that closing Cambria wasn't an option, according to the contract. Do you agree with that?
I mean, you know, he's got the gold, so we have to kind of listen.
Are you looking forward to renegotiating the contract at the end of 5 years?
Yes.
You are. Yes, that's what I wanted to hear. Thank you, Larry.
Do we have any other comments or questions for Mr. Pacus, Commissioner Warren?
Yes.
I did say
welcome. It's good to see you, Larry. One of my concerns, for one thing, I didn't get the letter in Cambria, so I don't know. I'm here on my own accord, simply because of the track record that I've seen in making referrals to CHC and over the years not having medical homes for so many people that needed it. I've got several questions, and one of them is in regards to expansion on this, because you are a nonprofit. So it's not like any money that you are making, because you do build different entities and you do have that opportunity, it's not going to shareholders, it's going back into the business. What kinds of things, if you were not to have this cut, what kinds of additional services would the patients in this county of CHC be able to access?
In fact, you know, we actually have a strategic 5-year plan, and on the table was the pediatric dental, which is much needed. I mean, we have Tolosa out there, but they're the only ones really providing that, and so that's one of the services that we would look at. and are providing more specialty care. We fund the contract. We're binded to orthopedics, cardiology, dermatology, and neurology, and infectious disease. There's gastro, there's urology, so we would augment those type of specialty. Even though CHCs throughout the United States don't really provide specialty care, but in our scope, if we do, it's a good thing because we can keep everything in-house and the continuity of care is there.
Okay, that does bring up another question. A lot of people I know within this county that didn't have medical homes for so long have chronic illnesses, chronic issues that have gone on for a long time, and they may have their own specialty care or not. How is that going to work with CHC and SenCal and using maybe some of the local specialists that are here? What's the relationship there?
It's actually been better. We are all, when SenCal first came into here, we were kind of, didn't know what was going to happen. But it seems that we are seeing more of the Medi-Cal. They actually are registering with us more than we thought. And I have heard there are some private docs that are not accepting Medi-Cal. I can't give you names, but I know there's a few out there. The idea that SenCal goes out and sets up panels for specialty care is a great one for us because we can tap into that. Let's say we have a patient that has no Medi-Cal, no source of income. We will actually tap into that and say we will pay you whatever the going rate is. And so sometimes we can get some of those specialty cares for those who have no sponsor can have that. And that's what we do. It's been great.
And my last question is regards to substance abuse services. I know that our county drug and alcohol is pretty well tied up with mandated CWS court-ordered programs. Do you look at any expansion in that and being able to provide kind of outpatient services?
You know, we met with Star Baber and then also with Biz Steinberg and kind of developed something. And we actually, I believe it's been on hold, or because maybe I haven't been there. but, you know, we look forward to delving into that. I mean, that's not our expertise. If you talk to our primary care docs, that's not a big deal, but then there's some other docs that, you know, are not into it. But I think once we educate even our docs, then we may be able to move forward and help out in that respect. I think we won't put a big dent, but we will at least be there on the table to work out something.
And that does bring up one more question about how much of your percentage goes into helping keep your docs by giving them, whether it's an incentive in wages, but also the education to keep them up to date.
Yeah. We actually pour in them. I don't have the exact percentage, but you know, we do have some incentive plans to keep them from, so that we don't have this jail flight. In fact, we've actually been doing that now. We meet almost once a month with all of our doctors. And we kind of put our whole network into four regions. Region 1 is Paso, Region 2 is SLO, Morbay and Cambria, Region 3 is Napomo, Oceano, and then Region 4 is our Santa Barbara County. And so we meet with all of our docs to, you know, and let them know of the different incentive plan that we, so that we can keep these docs, because it's hard. And it's hard to keep a medical home when you don't have the same doc. And yet we've been, for the last 4 years, we've been very good at that. And I think in the last month or so, we've actually hired four more docs to come into our system, which is good.
Commissioner Donnelly?
Yeah, I have a question. You know, I'm thinking back when I made the decision, when this commission made a decision to support this $500,000 for CHC, personally, I was under the impression when I made that decision, because I know that the Board of Supervisors and, I mean, the County Health Agency, everybody's facing some pretty serious cuts, and we have to make some serious decisions and try to do what's right, and our job on the commission is to try to help the Board of Supervisors in making a decision for at least the health care aspect of it and what's best for this county. Now, I was under the impression that if this $500,000 cut were to take place, $500,000 cut, that we were going to lose that 9,000 patient visits per year. But that, what I want to know, because Jeff the way that he outlined it today, is it does not sound like that is going to take place.
Well, you know, he mentioned some numbers. I'll just mention, let's use even numbers. Let's see, it was 190, then 200,000, then 210. Basically, if you take out the 9,000 from the 210, it's 2,001. It's still, we haven't decreased. In other words, we've seen more. So basically, that's what he's saying. But in to us, it's still going to be a less encounters. But what's going to happen is that, like I mentioned to Jeff, is that we're not.
Sorry, when you say less encounters than last year, or less than what you
than what has what? Been projected.
Okay. Yeah.
And but if we look at this whole thing, a lot of these patients will have no access. It's basically what we're looking at. If we close a site, there's no access at that site. So what happens is that some of these patients will either not see somebody or defer from seeing somebody or go to the ER or go to our 18 other clinics that we have. And you know, just so that you all know, we really do not want to close Cambria or Morvay. The question posed to us was, what would happen if we take this amount from you? In Cambria, the contract obligated us to 20 hours. But did we listen to that? No, we actually have 40 hours. And then we also have two providers up there. And in Morbay, we did have two. We kind of closed one because of the inefficiency of that whole scenario there. So, you know, in essence, we are not really, we're not ready to close anything. And, you know, if we're given a reduction, then, you know, we have to kind of make some decisions. And if it's unacceptable by the county to close it, then we will go in a boxing ring and figure it out.
Okay, but the discrepancy that I still can't get clear in my mind is, why would you have to close those sites if you're still going to be able to grow by that amount? I don't understand. If you're still able to grow, why are you talking about taking away, and why have these patients been sent a letter that possibly could happen,
right,
if you're able to still grow? I don't understand.
Well,
that.
If you look at the grow, I mean, if you just look at San Luis Obispo County and take out the other clinics, we have quite a few clinics throughout San Luis Obispo, San Miguel, you know, just different locations. And the thing is that if you get a full-time doc and have them at Cambria and they don't see any patients, it's kind of inefficient. You know, it's basically inefficient. And so when we looked at this whole thing, we said, okay, how can we be more efficient if they reduce this? So we basically look at our clinics that are inefficient, and Cambria is one of them. We don't really have the numbers there. And so that would be the case, you know. And we would still grow because then these patients will actually go into our other sites. You have to remember, when we in this county, we took only over four of the FCC clinics. We had other clinics already in place. And so, and Cambria wasn't one of them. It was one that was basically said that, you know, for this contract, you need to establish a clinic in Cambria, and we did. And it took a little while, but we did start one. And instead of having a half-time doc, we have a full-time doc. And now we also have a PA or a physician assistant that goes there one day. But still, the numbers aren't there. So that's what we look at. I mean, we don't want to, but we look at the inefficient. Like our other clinic at Tascadero, they're doing very well. The doctor will see 500 per month. And in Cambria, it's about 300. So those are the reasons.
Any other questions? Commissioner O'Dell?
Larry, don't you have a patient grievance system within your organization in place now?
Yes.
It's my understanding you have at all your clinics. There is a suggestion box or a complaint box or whatever.
We have a hotline that is anonymous that they can call and make any kind of anonymous good comment or bad comment. And then we also have a frame patient rights in Spanish and English, sliding fee, grievance procedures, and all of our clinics.
That's what I thought. You already have
an extensive
system in place.
Yes.
Right. Thank you.
Any other comments for Mr. Bacus? Thank you very much, and I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
Would the commission like to take a break, or would we like to continue on? Just thought I would ask.
Go on
is go on the consensus down here? Okay. Our next item of discussion is the continued discussion of COXI, also known as Valley Fever. We also have a possible action under this, and it says commission discussion. I'd like to open the floor to commission discussion. Commissioner Hetherington?
I have a question for the medical director, Dr. McMillan. I know that I think I had emailed Jean about the problem of not identifying where the Valley Fever outbreak was in North County. And I understand patient confidentiality is primary here, but I was also concerned after getting a phone call from somebody from North County saying, is that really fair that residents in that area or people working in that neighborhood or driving through that neighborhood are not aware that that's where the Valley Fever spike was? And is there any way around that, Dr. McMillan?
No. You wanted a clear answer?
Short answer.
You got one. I just want to comment that Ann McDowell did I watched her on the tube a week and a half ago. She did a great presentation to you. I'm very proud of her. Jeff should be. He's her real boss. I'm just here short term. But she did an article with the New Times about 3 weeks ago, and it shows that the Valley Fever spread around the whole county. You know, this is, again, just our county. And I think the point that I'm trying to make is that even though that particular outbreak that you're mentioning occurred in the North County area, in fact, we have cases all over the county because this particular bug is endemic. In other words, it's always here. What we have been doing since her presentation to you is I got a call just serendipitously from the Kern County Interim Health Officer, somebody who's a short-timer just like I am, and she apparently is a real expert on Valley Fever. She provided me with this excellent PowerPoint presentation on what she tells diggers in the dirt, people who are working in the construction fields and so forth, what to do to prevent getting this Valley Fever. And we're going to use this. We're going to make this available to the planning department whenever they provide conditions for construction projects. In fact, I did ask the planning department about a month and a half ago to contact Kern County because they have so many more cases than we do for exactly those conditions. So we're getting a lot of help on this, but to answer your question, no, we cannot give you a more specific answer. I have just released 1 week ago the state public health department's review of that outbreak. The state public health department did a lot of work on it to try and determine why there was a specific outbreak in one area with a small group of construction workers. And so we just got that report. I don't believe it's public, so I can only tell you about it. What I can tell you about it is that, very interestingly, they confirmed what this doctor over in Kern County said, which is that sometimes Valley Fever cases increase after a period of higher rainfall. I didn't understand that when I spoke to you before about a month ago. But in fact, she has confirmed that the reason is that it brings, the fungus spores go for the water. So if the water is 2 feet below the surface, that's where they go. But if the water level rises after heavy rainfall closer to the surface, the fungus spores are closer to the surface and can be more easily disturbed by construction activity. That was new information to me.
In going to the county planning, are you also going to reach out to the city planning departments with these documents?
Well,
I know it's not your jurisdiction, but I think
I would have
be.
To defer to Jeff on that. I only got a call from the county planning department because they seem to have more purview over the agricultural areas. So that's all I know about.
Commissioner Warren.
Yes, it seems that this might give us a great opportunity to sponsor a public health training, whether it's people in, it might do it in conjunction with Farm Bureau and everything else, kind of a training of trainers that could be initiated by the public health department to maybe bring this gal over here.
This is what she did. And yeah, I do not know her personally. I talked to her on the phone a couple times, and she might be willing to do that. Dr. Thomas, as you know, attended a major Valley Fever symposium before he left, and I believe one of the public health nurses went with him. However, she's no longer with the health department, so we lost that. Well, however, as I said, Ann McDowell has been a tremendous resource.
Right. Well, maybe, and working with LAFCO, that includes all the cities and everything, even though they may be mostly transportation, but this is kind of involved with people throughout the county. It just seems like it would just be an opportunity to, you know, take care of a whole lot of not only the agencies with the planning department and the health department and that, but offering some kind of a one-day symposium to just create a lot of new trainers, because two people have since left that were trained.
Yeah, and that may be a very good idea. And like I said, we have some potential resources to do that.
Commissioner Hetherington, did you have any more comments?
Well, I guess the reason that we had the possible action on there was to encourage the county planning department, which apparently has already been in contact with Dr. McMillan, but I think it was to go a step further and recommend to the cities that they follow the recommended guidelines as well. And I think that's where I had left it for an action item.
And we will look into that. I'm just not aware as to what they have going.
Commissioner Garena?
A couple of quick questions. The ones that were the victims in the North County, were they solely construction background, or was it any agricultural?
Strictly construction.
Strictly construction. Okay, good. Yeah. The other thing is, what sort of steps did that document you have from the Central Valley, what sort of steps are they recommending that construction people, is it a spacesuit or a?
Both this document from Kern County and the one from the State Health Department, State Public Health Department, recommend respiratory protection. Traditionally, we've talked, and I talked with the planning department, about primarily water dust control, you know, dust control using water, and the State Public Health Department's, and she talks about both. State Public Health Department stresses respiratory protection. They're saying that the individual employees should have masks, that they if they have tractors that have filter controls, they should use them rather than leave the tractor doors open, stuff like that.
When you speak of the masks, are you speaking of the kind that we wear in healthcare, or are you talking about the big
healthcare masks?
Oh, that's
N95s
simple.
N95s and N100s primarily.
Those are simple and inexpensive.
They're, well, you know, now that we all want them, they've become a little pricier. Yeah,
just like the gloves, right?
Yes, exactly.
Any other questions? Well, we'd like to open this up for a possible, help me with the word.
Public comment?
Absolutely public comment.
There is. All right, Jen, I was
okay, I don't think we need, I guess we're looking for a motion. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
I was just going to say, do you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we send a letter encouraging the cities in the county of San Luis Obispo to adopt those recommendations by the State Health Department.
Do we want to include more than just the city, or am I?
Well, I think they're already working with the county.
We are.
You know, so.
But even to maybe different construction companies, there's a lot of them.
Well, I guess what I was thinking is in the planning department, if we can encourage them to hand it out to those coming in for permits for development, that would reach the broader audience. That
would this be a letter from the commission
mm-hmm.
to the county
well,
and,
we could,
and the cities?
We could recommend it to the Board of Supervisors to send that letter, but their jurisdiction is not the cities.
No.
So I think we could definitely do that, can't we?
You can. I was just going to offer, as Dr. McMillan sort of alluded to, we can, at your informal direction, reach out to all of the city planning departments with this information, share it with them, encourage them to use it. It's no more binding on them if you write the letter than if we take care of it for you.
Okay.
Which we'll be happy to do.
You won't need a FTE for that, will you?
No.
Well, we'll
work with Vic Holanda, the planning director, who has contacts, I'm sure, with all the city planning folks.
Well, I think for the record, we ought to have a motion and, to such effect that encourage the department to do that.
You want to direct me to do it, that
would
be fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the motion will be to direct Jeff Hamm and the Public Health Department to notify the city's planning departments with the state recommendations.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Sorry, giving away work.
Thank you. Thank you.
May I take this opportunity to mention something else to you? I'm very honored as a short-time person to be working with a very professional staff at the Health Department. And tomorrow, we will be having a very high-level representative of the State Health Department come to us to thank our really brilliant professional staff for the help that they provided to two state agencies, two different unnamed state agencies in a confidential investigation that will be groundbreaking. You will see that report from the state someday. They'll take all the credit, of course. But I want to tell you that the same Ann McDowell and another person to be unnamed, because otherwise you'd know what it was, have done absolutely tremendous work for you.
Well, thank you for that wonderful tidbit. And thank you for your presentation and answering our questions regarding COXI. Our next item for discussion or up for our agenda is the Health Agency Director Report. Mr. Hamm again.
I really don't have a lot of information to share. I already touched a little bit on how wacky things are in Sacramento right now. The folks who have been up there for a long time, and the one that I work with most closely is Judith Riegels, the Executive Director of County Health Executives Association of California. And she's been in Sacramento paying close attention to budget development and policy development issues affecting health and human services, but primarily health, for years. And they are just completely astonished at how wacky is the term I'm going to use. The significance of the state's budget shortfall is just astronomical, and it's causing quite a bit of anxiety, of course, and some out of the box thinking. For example, there's a member of the legislature, Cox, who has had it in for first five commissions for a long time, thinks that they've made inappropriate decisions and spent money inappropriately and have allowed a huge surplus to exist, and all these sort of not entirely accurate things. But Prop 10, it's very possible that there could be an initiative out of Sacramento that would challenge Prop 10 and Prop 63, for example, the Mental Health Services Act. It's striking a lot of people that right now, while funding for core mental health services is crumbling, Mental Health Services Act funds continue to grow at significant pace, allowing, essentially requiring in county jurisdictions to have this very, very high-level program growing right next to core services crumbling at the same time, and you can't do anything about it because of the anti-supplantation provisions that were put in to Prop 63 at the time when the state was doing fairly well financially and nobody thought it would be a bad thing to establish an additional income tax on millionaires, you know, to provide for a very, very specific type of mental health service to folks who were being underserved. So there's going to be no shortage of out-of-the-box ideas about how to redirect existing financial resources. Nunez, the speaker, and the governor are still very, very interested in healthcare reform, and so that's going to continue to percolate in the background. The big issues in Sacramento are corrections and the funding demands placed on the state general fund by the receiver and by the Department of Corrections and Rehab in general, and education funding, which is a huge deal. And I think health program funding is sort of taken a back row politically to corrections and education. And so while, as I mentioned before, it's good news that the legislature has rejected quite a few of the governor's proposals to reduce funding in all sorts of different health care programs, it's unlikely that the governor is going to go along with that. And so between now and when the budget is adopted, it's going to be a very unsettling period of time for us. So anyway, that's kind of a bummer, but that's what's been taking up the vast majority of my time.
Any questions for Jeff? Okay, well, thank you for that report. Thank you for everything tonight. Commissioner updates. Your chair is not here. She's in Missouri, so I don't have any update to give for her. So I'll start down with Commissioner Warren.
No report tonight.
No report. Commissioner Donnelly? Commissioner Garena? Commissioner O'Dell?
No report.
Whoa. Commissioner Horn? No. Commissioner Chamusis?
Yes. I did attend the Adult Services Policy, this is where this goes, right?
Yes.
Adult Services Policy Council meeting. As always, it's always very informative and educational. We had a training seminar on the Medi-Cal, sort of a synopsis of how Medi-Cal works and the basic operations, how they determine things. It was nothing short of completely and totally and utterly mind-boggling. To even try to understand how determinations are made for various Medi-Cal benefits and what the criterion are was kind of beyond me in some areas, and I've been in healthcare for a long time. Other than that, there wasn't a whole lot going on in terms of health-related issues. So,
thank you for your update. Commissioner Hetherington?
May 21st, the Domestic Violence Task Force met. A lot of things going on, trying to coordinate all the different reporting requirements around domestic violence issues. And they have a new family law facilitator, Alicia Wright, who is helping to get people through the legal process when domestic violence happens. It's kind of like a one-stop shopping where people can go and learn how to fill out the forms. They don't give advice. They just help with the process. Dr. Amir had resigned as the Medical Society liaison, and so they're looking for somebody else that can fill that role. They meet every other month in the morning for an hour or so. They have already in motion the child death review team in domestic violence incidences, and next they're actually going to be doing the domestic violence death review process. Is coming on board, so not all happy news.
Not really. Commissioner Masse, no? Okay, and now we are at committee reports.
And?
I'm sorry, Commissioner Warren, I apologize.
That's okay. My brain kicked in, and I do have a report. From the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board last month. And because it was a very important presentation, and it was given by Julian Crocker, the County Office of Ed, and John Alfers from the County Office of Education, who is running, did run for this year, their first pilot program for a sober classroom.
Oh, wow.
And these were kids who were dedicated to living a sober lifestyle, and so they had different services and things that came in and were part of their day. And it's so successful that they're hoping to expand it a little bit. I think they had 12 students this year. And it was a really good first try. And there's whole sober schools throughout the country. But they were real pleased with this first pilot program.
Great report. Thank you. Next up is committee reports, unless somebody else remembers a report. Legislative. Do we have any update on? Yes, we do, Commissioner Chamusis.
Basically the update is that the legislative committee will not probably be meeting until this fall. So we're sort of in recess.
In recess,
as it were.
Community education, Commissioner Hetherington.
Jean's doing a stellar job on the webpage.
Of course.
So, I think just feeding information to her is what we're going to be looking at. We don't have a meeting scheduled, but we can if we need to.
I did notice that you did put the web page up immediately after our last meeting, and that was really fast. So kudos to you, because it was like the very next day. Things don't usually happen that fast. So anyway, thank you. Budget, do we have anything on budget other than it's dismal? Okay. We do have a lot on nominating, so I'll put on my glasses so I can read what I need to write or share what I have written. Recommendations for new health commissioners. Well, first of all, I'm going to just start through my list, and if we want to do one entire motion, maybe we can, and if we need to do one motion by itself, we can do that as well. I'm sorry, why don't we, the new appointees? Well, first of all, we need to discuss the resignations. We have two resignations, myself and Dr. Mossy. We also have two commissioners that are not reapplying, and that would be Commissioner Horn and Commissioner Donnelly. The next thing on our list is we are reappointing Commissioner Chamusis and Commissioner Enns. Their terms were expiring, and Commissioner Enns is a direct provider, and we are asking the committee or the commission to move Commissioner Chamusis to an indirect provider, because of her profession, leaving three consumers. We'd also like to ask the commission to appoint Jesse Arnold and Don Williams, both consumers. And we are still going to be minus one consumer and one direct provider, which will be up to the new commission to make that determination. And we've also asked for the officers for appointment for 2008, 2009. Commissioner Enns is chair, Commissioner Hetherington is vice chair, Commissioner Chamusis as secretary. This would all become effective July 1st, 2008, and it all is subject to Board of Supervisors for the new committee members or commissioner members to their approval. Did I get that all out in one word or less? Any questions? Yes, Commissioner Hetherington?
I was just going to move that we do two separate, the slate of officers, because that doesn't need to go to the Board of Supervisors.
Absolutely, and that's not a problem.
Okay. So I move that we accept the consumers, Jesse Arnold and Don Williams, as new commissioners.
Second.
Oh, I think we got a second. She muses. Is there a question? Uh-oh.
No, it's no big deal, but I thought I heard you say that the board didn't need to act on reappointments.
No, they need to I think they react on appointments. The only thing they don't respond to is our officers.
Right. Okay.
Or so far in the past.
Thank you. Reappointments.
They've never, yes. And we do reapply and we do make the recommendation to the board. Thank you.
I'll amend my motion to read that we appoint the new members, I mean, reappoint the old members and appoint the new members.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Next motion, please. Officers. Oh. Is someone going to make a motion?
I make a motion to accept the officers as nominated.
Second. Thank you. All in favor? Anyone opposed? If you're opposed, that means you have to run yourself. Okay. Next item on our agenda, we're going to get through this here. Thank you, everyone, for your input there. Future perspective, future items. It's time for dinner, I think. You are going to have a retreat, and that's what I put down. TBA at retreat. Is make all your, yeah, I just put.
For the year.
For the year, absolutely. So if there's not any other questions or comments, I'd like to adjourn this meeting and thank everyone for everything.
Thank you all.
We have to move. Do we have to move to adjourn? I need a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's keep going.
Oh, I can't, thank God.